Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Friday Roundup. I'm Brandon Waltons, the managing editor of Texas Scorecard. And today we're going to talk about a few of the big stories from this past week that you have probably seen up at TexasScorecard.com. If you're watching this live, if you have any questions, please feel free to leave those in the comments. But first, I'm going to be joined by Cliff Maloney, the head of Young Americans for Liberty, who, you know, you've been definitely in the news the past couple days for a big conference y'all were slated to have here in Texas that got canceled at the last minute. Cliff, first of all, thanks for joining us. Now a little bit of background. This Mobilize 2020 conference, what kind of event is that? How many people were y'all expecting to have?
Yeah, so Young Americans for Liberty, we were hosting an event, like you said, Mobilize 2020. And the idea is, as an organization, we recruit college students, and then we try to get them not just excited about the principles of liberty, but to then take that and go out and try to make some impact and bring about some change in society by deploying them into elections. And so this Mobilize 2020 is kind of our, hey, let's come together for a big training. And the way we break down the event is we've got about 1,400 students who come in, young professionals as well, so 18 to 25-year-olds. And we had about 100 elected officials, Senator Rand Paul, Congressman Thomas Massie, some of the big liberty type names to try to excite our students, right? So we teach them not only the principles of liberty at these events, but also we train them on the tactics of how to go out and engage, how to persuade, how to talk to individuals. And so we count on this event. This is a big moment for us to be able to kind of springboard into the general election. So it's frustrating. You know, they decided to cancel the event on Monday. This is an event that kicked off Thursday. I mean, they literally waited, Brandon, until we had all of our staging, our AV, all the banners, the name badges, everything was there. We were in the loading dock, and the city decided to pull the plug. And so it's frustrating because, you know, look, there are certainly protests that are allowed to happen. And whatever you think of the protests, whether you're for them or against them, at least apply it evenly, right? At least let us do our event, where you're going to have 1,400 students who are there for an educational training. They're peaceful, right? And we were taking precautions. So it's just frustrating. It's hard to not see this as politically biased.
And this event, I mean, we talked earlier, it was originally scheduled to take place in Austin. Austin, of course, the mayor here, you know, very liberal city council, thought probably smartly, yeah, let's get it out. Let's get it out of here. But it seems like you can't escape it. I mean, y'all even had a backup plan for the Dallas backup plan, and even that fell through.
Yeah, so this is Texas. This is supposed to be the freest state in the nation, as I've been told. You know, we just moved our organization down here to Austin. And at the beginning of the year, you're right, we announced that we would do the event here downtown Austin with this idea of bringing these students in and doing this training. And once we saw Adler start to kind of play politics, and as the coronavirus, you know, was starting to impact a lot of public policy and a lot of these, I'll call them dictators. I mean, a lot of these tyrants decided, whether it's anything from the mayor to the governor trying to mandate masks. You know, we don't agree with that. We think people should have the choice to be able to go where they want to go, to be able to leave their house, to be able to go to work, to do commerce. So it was very frustrating for us. And in June, we announced, hey, we're not going to mess with Austin anymore. We moved the event to Dallas. Now, here's the funny part. The Dallas city threw all of these different roadblocks at us. You know, first they said, hey, you've got to wear masks. We said, okay, we'll comply. We will. Then they said, you have to do box lunches. You can't do buffets. Okay, we agreed to do that. Then they said the people you travel with have to be your roommates. Travel mates are your roommates. Okay, we'll make that work. And then they had all these different social distancing guidelines they kept throwing at us for capacity of the room. But their fire marshal approved all the specs. We put everything in front of them, and everything was approved a week before the event. So what changed? What changed between them approving that and them canceling our event? Even though I disagree with the governor's mandates, they were made the beginning of the month, right? The city has had weeks, if not an entire month, to make the decision. But this is the problem. When the governor put out that mandate, it gives cover to the Democrats. It gives cover to folks, right? And the saying, you know, as it goes, you give a bureaucrat an inch, they're going to take a mile of your freedom, right? When Adler let out that mandate, what it did was it allowed the Democrats to hide behind it. Now, once again, I don't agree with how the Democrats are interpreting it, because for indoor events, if we're going to follow the procedures, we should still be able to have it. But that's where, you know, I push back when people say, oh, well, you know, you weren't going to comply. We were even willing to comply. And some conservatives and libertarians were mad at me for that. So even when we were willing to comply, they still took the time to rip the rug out from under us 72 hours before the event came off. I mean, this is pure politics to me. They obviously don't like the ideology of YAL, us teaching kids about the Constitution, us knocking doors for hardcore liberty type candidates this fall. And for anybody that doesn't see it, I mean, open your eyes. There were 40 straight days of protests in the city of Dallas. And the only thing you'd hear from the mayor's office is praise, right? Is encouragement of the message. And look, that's fine. If he wants to agree with the message, that's fine. Okay. But don't shut down YL because you disagree with our message. Apply your rules fairly and don't act like it's not politically biased. So we're entertaining all options. We're looking at litigation. We're talking to different attorneys. And I'm not just going to sit back. We are using this moment, this anger, this frustration. We're springboarding. We just launched. Look, we announced this as we're going into the general election. You know, we've got Operation Win at the Door. That's our big program on our political side. And so I'm trying to spin, you know, some lemonade here out of lemons. And we're trying to harness that energy into something good.
Yeah. I mean, you know, look, so they come up, they cancel this event. By the way, I think it's worth noting. I mean, I had heard the city didn't even directly contact y'all. They had the hotel staff basically do it for them. But, you know, what sort of position does that put y'all out of, you know, financially for maybe some of the preparations or some of the potential fundraising that was going to happen at this event?
Yeah, so I just want to be very clear. I mean, the Omni worked with us hand in hand, and I will give them a lot of credit. I mean, they worked with us to kind of make all these adjustments, and they gave us a full refund. So I'm very grateful for that. But the problem is I'm still out about $200,000 to vendors, to things that we printed, to things that if they would have gave us a week, I'd be completely pissed off. But guess what? I wouldn't be out $200,000, right? That's the problem here is there were too many things that, you know, we had to make decisions on. And once again, they approved our specs. The fire marshal looked at all this and said, A-okay, enjoy your event, be safe, thank you for complying. So that's where we're at. Full refund from the Omni, but there's about $200,000 in things that we're not going to be able to recoup the costs on. And that's what we're really trying to figure out is do we go after the city for that? What options do we have? And that's what I'm trying to analyze right now.
It will certainly be watching that. And Cliff, so, you know, with this conference now, you know, unfortunately it not happening because of the city's rule, what is Young Americans for Liberty? What is the plan going forward, to November and beyond right now?
Yeah. So right now we're putting all of our energy into our general election push, which is October 1 through November 3. And for those that don't know, if you go to yaliberty.org, you can kind of see our program Operation Win at the Door. But the idea is we're trying to elect 250 what we call liberty legislators, people who truly believe in the Constitution across the country. And that's our goal. That's kind of our long-term goal by 2022. We've won 56 races so far. That doesn't include any of the primaries of this cycle. We don't count them as wins until they've sworn in. But we've got 56 wins across the country. And that's what we're focused on is we're going to continue this fall on campus to recruit students, get them excited about the ideas and the principles of liberty. But I think the one thing that we really want to own is putting that into action, right? Taking those ideas and actually going into the community and trying to get people elected so we have a voice within these state legislatures. And what that does is it gives us a bench. You know, hardcore conservatives that believe in the Constitution, the liberty movement crowd, we're always looking for kind of that minor leagues. Where's the team? Where's the infrastructure to step up? That's the plan we have at Young Americans for Liberty. And so two things I'm focused on right now is getting back on campus in the fall and continuing to recruit students. And then two, this general election, October 1 through November 3rd, we're trying to deploy 1,000 students this cycle. And if we can do it, I think we're going to win a lot of races. And I think we're going to stun the establishment in a lot of places. So I'm pretty excited about it.
And last question, if folks want to help you out with that venture, what can they do to help?
Yeah, so we need three things at Young Americans for Liberty. Go to yaliberty.org, check us out on social at yaliberty or at Young Americans for Liberty. But if you really want to get involved, there's three buckets. The first thing we need are door knockers. So if you're a young person or if you know a young person that wants to get involved and wants to get paid, we pay a stipend, we put them up in free housing, it's an experience, right? We give you enough money so you can eat and not starve and go broke. But if anybody you know wants the door knock, tell them to get involved. We've got plenty of campaigns and spots to get them out. The second is candidates. I'm encouraging everybody here listening, force your state rep candidate in your local area to fill out a YAL survey. Okay, there's nothing better than us being able to get these folks on the record, even if we don't endorse them. Let's get them on the record and we can hold them accountable to that record. So the second thing I need is candidates. The third thing is funding. So if people want to sponsor a student, if they want to sponsor somebody, a certain campus in the United States for us to do outreach on, all of those three things are the buckets that help us scale our programming. YALiberty.org. And Brandon, I just want to say, always appreciate what you guys do. It's tough for us to find people who understand, you know, I know we might be here in an educational sense, but playing in primaries, and really, we got a problem here in Texas. You know, Texas is not this conservative bastion that people think it is. I think we can still save Texas. I think we can get there. And I think group like Empower Texans, I mean, I think that's one of the only ways we do it. So I just want to say thank you to you guys for all the work you're doing.
No, well, thank you. And we really, really appreciate the work you're all doing. And thank you so much for coming on this morning.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Next story right now, we're going to Robert Montoya in the DFW Metroplex. Robert, you followed a very, very interesting school board meeting of the Carroll ISD school board this past week as they considered a pro, I don't even know what you would call it. It's essentially this LGBTQ plus, add whatever letter, student focus group, where students can accuse each other of microaggressions. At a cost of nearly $1.5 million. Robert, first of all, help me make sense of this plan. It just seems completely wild when you read about it.
To ask me to make sense of this plan would be to ask me to make sense of government mandates since Corona started.
so it's a hard one. Okay. But maybe we can try to begin.
Yeah. So to summarize briefly, since 2018, when a video came out on social media from students of Carroll ISD using racial slurs, that for some reason triggered the school board to say, oh, we need to create a plan to address this, as though just a few students saying a racial slur is indicative of racism throughout the entire school district, which, by the way, this school district today has more minorities than it did years ago. So obviously, if this is a school of what we hear, you know, the left saying a school of white racism, well, whoever these white racists are, they're doing a terrible job. But what the plan does is called the Cultural Competency Action Plan. If you really look at what it does, one, it creates an LGBTQ plus student focus group. And the rest of the plan is about changing the curriculum of the school to promote diversity, whatever that means. And also, it essentially turns the school into an enforcer where students can accuse each other of microaggressions, another buzzword of the left for anything that offends you. And it's just can be rife for abuse. Like students can accuse each other. They can have stuff put on their record. Mm-hmm. And nowhere in the document that, you know, you can find on our website or in any of the explanations by this diversity council put together the plan, there's no sense of students are innocent until proven guilty. There's no appeals process that I can find where students can say, look, I've not done what I've been accused of.
Mm-hmm. And I think the most amazing thing, I mean, I mentioned it, but it's just the cost. I mean, this is at a cost of nearly $1.5 million at a time, mind you, when, you know, school districts, local governments should be looking at ways to tighten their belts in light of, you know, the economy. Due to these coronavirus shutdowns and other factors. And so they were slated to consider it. People thought maybe they would have approved it this week. They actually delayed it, but they held a school board meeting, and you had a lot of people testify, right?
Yes. There were a lot of concerned parents who came in to testify. Also, if you're concerned about the future of the country, you should be concerned about how many students also came speaking in favor of this plan, and a lot of them ended their speeches saying Black Lives Matter, which, as we know, is a movement now associated with riots and burning down cities, as opposed to looking out for, you know, Black Americans' lives. And parents, there was one parent, Mike Pizzera, who said, we've had very little public input time on this. And another, Mitch Stacy, said, we already have a student code of conduct to handle these issues. And another called in, Mr. Tan. He said, I'm a person of color, and I totally disagree with the plan. Who are you to tell me a person of color whether I'm confident towards cultural sensitivity. And he ended by saying, not all people are racist. So it's not even like all minorities are united on this plan in support of it.
And so they what was the action they took? So they did not approve it. They essentially punted a little bit to consider it, to set up more workshops, more whatever. But right now, I mean, what is the feeling amongst the school board? I mean, they themselves are the ones who sort of requested this draft to come up with. They haven't really approved it, but it seems like it is their plan. I mean, even if they haven't.
So here's the message for, you know, what I'm hearing from the grassroots is frustration. Here's the message for everyone. This week was not a victory. It was a delay. Not one member of the school board said they're against the plan. A number did express concerns about the process. Why are we rushing through to doing this? But they just voted to accept the plan, and there's going to be a series of board workshops, and they also want to have like some public town halls so the public, they can talk with the public about this. So The good news for the grassroots, for families who are concerned about this, there's still time to defeat this, but I've not yet heard one school board member publicly say, this is a terrible plan, let's vote against it.
And excellent. So what can folks in that school district, and by the way, even if you don't live in that school district, I mean, this is an important story to watch because I think this is a trend of what's going to come to probably a number of school districts across the state. But people in Cal ISD, what can they be doing right now?
Well, right now, the most important thing you can be doing is calling your school board members. Be aware that school board members Michelle Moore and Sherry Mills are on the diversity council that came up with this plan. So they are very much in support of it. Contact Todd Carlton, David Almond, Eric Lannon, Danny Gilpin, and Matt Bryant. Let them know how you feel about this. And if you can convince them, that's a majority vote to end this.
Excellent. Well, one last thing. You're going to be over at the, I just want to let folks know, we've got an article up about this special Congressional District 4 convention. Essentially, you're going to have Republican Party county chairs and precinct chairs meeting tomorrow in Congressional District 4 over in Northeast Texas to essentially select the next congressman to replace John Ratcliffe. You're going to be out there. If folks want to be following that, they can look for updates on that at Texas Scorecard. And we appreciate you doing that, Robert. Thanks for joining.
My pleasure.
Excellent. Well, it goes without saying, for considering such an outrageous plan and voting to move forward with continuing to accept this left-wing indoctrination plan at a cost of $1.5 million, Carroll ISD School Board, definitely this week's half-wits. Now, for this week's hero, we actually look outside of the Lone Star State. You know, sometimes the truth hurts to hear, and it hurts to hear from people outside. But after the city of Dallas canceled the Young Americans for Liberty convention this week, we talked a bit about that with Cliff Maloney earlier. After they canceled that, South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem, who was actually scheduled to speak to the conference, took to Twitter and said some harsh words, that our First Amendment guarantees the right to peaceably assemble. I thought Texas was supposed to be a bastion of freedom. Well, you know, for speaking the truth right now, Kristi Noem, this week's hero. By the way, this is a governor who did not go along with the shutdown mask mandate closures, and instead has had a lot of success with letting people make their own decisions at Liberty. How about that?
Thank you for listening to this week's Friday Roundup from Texas Scorecard. Remember, you can head to the Empower Texans Facebook page at 11 a.m. every Friday to watch the show live and get your questions in.